Howard says nothing. Recalls Kipling and Ruprecht van Doren.
But that's what was interesting about this essay. Near the end of his life, Graves met a Sufi mystic who told him about another goddess, a black goddess. Mother Night, the Greeks called her. This black goddess existed beyond the white. Instead of desire and destruction, she represented wisdom and love. Not romantic love, but real love, as you might say, reciprocating, enduring love. Of those who devoted their lives to the white goddess and this endless cycle of ravagement and restoration, a very few, if they managed to survive it, would eventually pass through her to the black goddess.
Good for them. And what about everybody else? All the mugs who don't manage to transcend or whatever.
Slattery's face crumples into a smile.
Graves said that the best thing to do was to develop a strong sense of humour.
A sense of humour.
Life makes fools of us all, sooner or later. But keep your sense of humour, and you'll at least be able to take your humiliations with some measure of grace. In the end, you know, it's our own expectations that crush us.
He raises his glass, sending ice cubes tumbling about his upper lip, and drains it.
I suppose I should be getting along before my own goddess starts to wander. Goodbye, Howard. Keep in touch. I hope I'll see you before too long.
Just as the door closes behind Slattery, the lights go out in the pub, and the sudden darkness is filled by a dim but quite unearthly noise, at once eerie and somehow mechanical. But it lasts for only a few seconds, and then power is restored, and all returns to normal. The drinkers settle back into their chat. Howard, with no one to talk to, contents himself with nursing his drink and watching the lounge girl as she crosses and recrosses the floor, tray in hand. Another muse in waiting, another goddess who would transform everything, whose beauty you could surely never get tired of. Muses, goddesses. It sounds so preposterous, but wasn't that how Halley had appeared to him in the beginning? A fragment of pure otherness, a radiance who burned through the stale facts of his life like a flame through an old picture? She told him stories of her home, and he heard something transcendental. He looked at her, and he saw another world, America. A magic soil where dreams, like seeds, would alight and instantly take root. Far away from this tiny island where you never lost your old nickname. Where people couldn't help sliding into the positions left by their fathers and mothers. The same ones at the top, middle and bottom all the time. The same names in the school yearbook. And she, no doubt, had done the same with him. She had looked at him and seen Ireland, or whatever she thought that was. She had seen history, paganism, romantic landscapes, poetry, and not a man who needed help to love. From the beginning, each was, for the other, first and foremost, a flesh and blood representative of a different life, a passport into a fresh new future. What had happened since then was nothing more or less cruel than the real person seeping through the illusion. Not a gateway to anything, just somebody like you, fumbling their way through the day. A sense of humour, he thinks. A sense of humour. If only someone had told him before. 2 hours after the chaos that closed the Seabrook College 140th anniversary concert, when it seemed that nothing could ever be quiet again, and the school is calm once more, although anyone who was present at the quartet's performance is still experiencing it as a ringing in his ears. And over the next few days, a lot of people will be talking in capital letters. Everyone else has gone to bed. Jeff, Dennis and Mario are sitting on the slatted benches of the unlit rec room.
What did he say?
Mario asks.
Are you going to be expelled?
Probably,
Dennis says.
We have to go and see him first thing on Monday,
Jeff says.
He said he needed time to think before he decided what our punishment should be.
Shitorama. This is a high price to pay for a foolish experiment that did not work.
Totally worth it, Dennis says. Best thing von Boner's done in his whole useless, overweight life.
In terms of the comprehensive destruction of a night's entertainment, Ruprecht's experiment was an unqualified success. The multi-frequencied Pachelbel loop, building and building so unendurably, was merely a starter, noise-wise. Just as the automator took the stage, the Van Doren wave oscillator crashed. Instantly, the sports hall was filled with a jangle of indescribable static. Keening, popping, crackling, hissing, tweeting, belching, roaring, gurgling. A bedlam of utterly alien sounds unleashed at such a volume as to be palpable physical presences. A menagerie of impossible beasts marauding through our reality. Disembodied, robotic voices interspersed among them, like a demented mechanical Pentecost. Too much for this audience. They fled for the doors. Hats were lost in the jostle. Spectacles crushed. Women knocked to the ground. They ran until they reached the entrance to the car park, where, a safe distance away, they turned back to view the still ululating hall, as though expecting it to implode or lift off into the sky. It did not. Instead, after a couple of moments, the noise came to a sudden halt, as the sound desk shorted out, and with it the school power supply. At which point, a large minority of them stormed back in again to track down the automator and ask him what the hell kind of bloody game he was playing at.
I'm damned if I'm paying you $10,000 a year to turn my son into a terrorist.
This never would have happened in Father Furlong's day.
It took nearly an hour of placating, assuaging, and mollifying before the automator could return to his office, where the quartet had been confined. When he did, he made little effort to disguise his fury. He railed. He roared. He pounded the desk, sending photographs and paperweights flying. There was a new tone in his voice tonight. Before, he'd treated them as he treated all the boys, like insects, flimsy and inconsequential. Tonight he spoke to them like enemies. Ruprecht got the worst of it. Ruprecht, a deviant who had brought his parents nothing but shame. Ruprecht, whose brilliance covered a deep-rooted degeneracy, of which this farrago was merely the latest example.
You know what I'm talking about, Van Doren.
The acting principal stared across the desk at him, like a ravenous animal through the bars of its cage.
A lot of things have become clear to me now. A lot of things.
The others were all crying, but Ruprecht just stood there, head bowed, while words fell on him like axes to the chest.
I'll be honest with you, boys,
the automator concluded.
For various legal reasons, expulsion can be difficult to arrange these days. It's not impossible you'll get away with a long suspension. And in a way, I hope you do. Because it means I will have the next 4.5 years to make your lives hell. I will make them a living hell. You assholes.
Mamma mia,
Mario says now.
He can say what he wants,
Dennis retorts.
We're part of Seabrook history now. I mean, people are going to be talking about this for decades.
The moon has peeped out from behind a cloud, and he is seized with a creeping euphoria.
The look on my mum's face. Oh, Van Boner, you are a genius after all.
A thought occurs to him.
Hey, maybe if I get expelled I could write his biography. What do you think? Bummer on the Loose, the Ruprecht Van Doren story.
Where is Ruprecht anyway?
Asks Mario.
He's not in his room.
He seemed pretty down.
Jeff remarks cautiously.
Well, what did he expect? Skippy's going to appear in a big ball of light and give us all high fives?
I did not say to Ruprecht before, but if I am in heaven getting on with a sexy angel, there is no way I am coming back to attend some gay school concert.
Mario says, then with a yawn rises from the bench.
Anyhow, I have heard enough bollocks for one evening. For the record, I hope you are not expelled. I would miss you guys, though this does not make me a homosexual.
Night, Mario.
Yeah, whatever.
The door wheezes shut behind him. For a time, the remaining two sit in silence, each occupied with his own thoughts. Jeff turns to the window, as if the faint silvering cast by the unveiled moon might reveal everything absent to be right out there in the yard. Then, after taking a moment, perhaps to summon up courage, he says casually to Dennis,
"You don't think it worked?"
"What?"
"Ruprecht's experiment." "You don't think it worked?"
"Of course not."
"Not even a little bit?"
"How could it possibly have worked?"
"I don't know,"
Jeff says, and then,
"It's just that when all that noise started, I thought I heard a voice that sounded like Skippy's."
"Are you talking about the German truck driver?"
"Didn't he sound a lot like Skippy?"
"Okay, explain to me why Skippy would be talking in German about trucks."
"I suppose,"
Jeff admits.
"Jeff, you should know by now that none of Ruprecht's ideas ever works. And this one was off the wall even by his standards."
"Right,"
Jeff says. His face falls a little, then rouses as he is struck by something.
"Hey, though, if you didn't ever think it would work, how come you agreed to do it?"
Dennis considers this, and then at last...
"I would say... malice."
"Malice?"
"Like the automator said. Malice. Wanting to spoil the concert for everybody, that sort of thing."
"Oh."
Jeff allows a polite interval to elapse while he affects to take this on board. In the moonlight, he has been seized by a tingle of euphoria, the same sensation Dennis had earlier, reflecting on the concert. Only Jeff's is from a different source. Then, attempting to muffle his delight, he says,
"I know the real reason you did it."
"Oh, you do?"
Dennis, all caustic surprise.
"Enlighten me, please."
"You did it because you wanted all of us to be together again. You knew it wouldn't work, and you knew we'd get in trouble. But you also knew that what Skippy would want, if he was here, is for us all still to be friends. And this was the only way to do it. And even though it didn't work, it did sort of work, because when we're all together, it's like Skippy's there too. Because each of us has his own little jigsaw piece of him he remembers. And when you fit them all together, and you make the whole picture, then it's like he comes to life."
Dennis remains silent, then issues a long, slow talking with his tongue.
"Jeff, how long have you known me? Is that really the kind of thing you'd think I'd think? Because if it is, I'm very disappointed."
Yeah. I knew you'd say that too."
"I'm going to bed,"
Dennis says peremptorily.
"I don't have to sit here and listen to my character being assassinated."
He gets up, then he stops, sniffing the air.
"Did you just cut one?"
"No."
Dennis sniffs the air again.
"That is rough. You need to stop eating those urinal cakes, Jeff."
With that, he's gone. And now Jeff's alone in the rec room. But he doesn't feel alone. Not nearly as alone as you can feel sometimes. When the room is full of people playing table tennis and copying homework and throwing wet tissues at each other. In the wake of Ruprecht's song, everything seems unusually placid, contented, still. And you can sit, just another object, not so colourful as the pool table, nor so lightful as the Coke machine, and think of what Skippy might say if he were here, and what you, Jeff, might say back to him, until a yawn comes over you, and you rise and pad back out to get your toothbrush and go to bed. So tired all of a sudden, you don't notice the ever more acrid tint to the air, nor the first wisps of malign black smoke as they creep up the stairs. It sounded like when you set an animal on fire. Then all around him were black bodies rising out of the grass. They rose up. They were screaming. Only Carl could hear them. Then he was on the street outside his house. He didn't know how he got there. The noise was gone. They were gone. But the night kept getting darker and darker. He blinked to push it back, but then it came crashing in again. Lights did not make any difference. The rain and the pox of the path joined up to make words he could not say. Words made of secret letters. Every word was a shell that held an empty universe.